We're going to change the format a little bit from what you normally do. Your program is normally discussion oriented or based, and this is going to be more class or lecture on Bhagavad Gita. You last read chapter 2, text 39, Bhagavad Gita, so we're going to cover chapter 2. Could you say it again?
40 also they finished.
You finished 40. Okay. So you finished 39 and 40. So we're going to be discussing text 41. Since you discussed 1 week ago text 39 and 40, what was the topic that you discussed last week? What's the subject matter? Of last week's Bhagavad Gita class. Who would like to volunteer something that they remember from text 39 and 40? Yeah.
Krishna first comes to Jnana Yoga from chapter 2. Then he comes to Karma Kanda section. In 39 and 40 he transitions from Karma Kanda section to basically to Buddhi Yoga. He tells him that what is Buddhi Yoga. And he tells him there is no loss on this in this path. So whatever you...
But you're ahead of yourself. That comes up next. Oh, excuse me. That was 40. No loss. Okay.
So whatever you do is permanent and eternal, will always remain with you. So now he's going to tell more about the Buddhi Yoga. So he starts with Buddhi Yoga.
Okay. A little editing, if I may. The prior verses in chapter... two are about Sankhya, because that's what he says. Sankhya Yoga and Jnana Yoga are not identical in all respects. There's distinction. Sankhya means literally to count. It traditionally means to analyze the distinction between matter and spirit. Over here is matter, different divisions of matter, and over here is spirit. So analytically evaluating matter and spirit and the distinction between them. Sankhya. We wouldn't define Gyan or Gyan Yoga in the same way. So that's Sankhya. That's what he's done, because in the earlier part of chapter 2, Arjuna's question is, what is my duty? And essentially Krishna says, before we talk about duty, let's talk about who you are. Then we can talk about duty. So who are you? And that's Sankhya, your spirit. You're not in this category of matter. You're eternal, you're not temporary, and so on. So now that's who you are. Now, having explained Sankhya, I'm going to explain the elements of Buddhi Yoga. And Buddhi specifically means intelligence, spiritual intelligence. It's different than, you know, the intelligence of how to run a computer or how to drive a car or make a car or fix a car or, you know, it's not technology. It's spiritual intelligence. And spiritual intelligence means how to reach the goal of life. You may not be able to fix a car or build a computer, but if you know how to reach the goal of life, life is successful. If you know how to fix a car but don't know what the goal of life is, you've misused the human form of life. The Buddhi is spiritual intelligence. The Krishna says that he's going to explain that, Buddhi Yoga. And then he begins that explanation by saying, first of all, that it's as the soul lives beyond the body, so the benefit of Buddhi Yoga goes beyond the body. And even a little bit, svalpam, even a very small amount of devotional service rendered is permanent, it's beyond the body. And this one who takes up this bhuti yoga or devotional service will not have to face life's greatest fear, mahabhaya. Mahabhaya. Trayate mahato bhayat. And this mahabhaya is the soul going down to the lower species of life, specifically meeting the Amadutas is very fearful. Only those who are going down to the lower species of life have that rude experience of meeting the Amadutas. Death comes for all, but the Amadutas come to those who are to go down to the lower species of life because of their stockpile of sinful activities is too much. So they're punished by Yamaraj to experience hellish existence, and after which they're awarded some lower species of life, animal life, insect life, bird life, tree life, some lower form of life after experiencing the hellish planets as the penalty for their sinful activities. So that means, say positively, if one engages in a little devotional service, they're guaranteed a human form of life. Guaranteed a human form of life, and they guarantee that they'll at least have the opportunity to continue devotional service in their next life. They may say no, but at least the opportunity to engage and continue in their devotional service in their next life form, in a human life form. So that's what text 40 is saying. Now, text 41, it's an often quoted verse in the whole of Bhagavad Gita, and the purport itself is packed, so we'll spend some time unpacking the packed purport and hold up this part and hold up that part and then put it back together again. So be patient with me while I go through the purport, because it's a very special, special, special purport in the whole of Bhagavad Gita. So let us chant the verse together. You have your Bhagavad Gitas. Text 41. Share your book, please. Vyavasayatmika buddhir.
Vyavasayatmika buddhir.
Ekeha kurunandana.
Ekeha kurunandana.
Bahushakaya nandascha.
Bahushakaya nandascha.
Buddhayo vyavasayinam.
Buddhayo vyavasayinam.
Vyavasayatmika
buddhir. Vyavasayatmika buddhir.
Ekeha kurunandana.
Ekeha kurunandana.
Bahu shakaya nandascha.
Bahu shakaya nandascha.
Buddhayo vyavasayinam.
Buddhayo vyavasayinam.
Translation: those who are on this path are resolute in purpose and their aim is one. O beloved child of gurus, the intelligence of those who are irresolute is many-branched. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. A strong faith that by Krishna consciousness one will be elevated to the highest perfection of life is called vyavasayatmika intelligence. Okay, so first sentence, Prabhupada is on the authority of our acharyas. He's indicating that faith, strong, resolute faith, requires spiritual intelligence, or a component of spiritual intelligence is a necessary prerequisite, is strong faith. And what is faith? If we want to understand what is buddhi, let's understand what is faith, logically. So, he gives the quote from Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is Lord Chaitanya's description of faith. in Bengali. Shraddha shabde vishvas kahi sudridha nishchaya krishne bhakti koile sarva karma kritahaya. Faith means unflinching trust in something sublime. That literally it means if you have confidence that by achieving one thing, all other desirable things will be achieved, that's what faith is. Let's give some examples. A materialist has faith. Get money. Because if I get money, I can get the things I want and then I can be happy. And I want to be happy, so get money. If I can just do this one thing, get money, all other desirable things will be achieved. So I have faith and I go after it because I have faith in getting money. Or an alcoholic, get wine. Because if I get wine, then my troubles will be gone and I'll feel happy. So somehow get some alcohol. And everything else follows behind that one thing because that's their conviction. The candidate for president. Just get that presidency. Get those votes. Get to the top of the voting ladder. Get your polls up there and become popular and become president, because then all other desirable things will be achieved. Or the Olympic athlete, they put everything else aside and just get that gold medal for whatever it is, their particular sport. People live by principles of faith. So buddhi, or devotional faith, is if I can achieve one thing, Krishna bhakti, then all other desirable things in life will follow that one thing. Somehow get Krishna bhakti. Krishna bhakti sarva karma kritahaya. All other desirable things will be attained. That's faith. Confidence in one thing. So I don't have to be. Here's how it works. The opposite is, if I don't have faith in this one thing, I have to have, like, invest in a lot of other things. Because supposing this one thing doesn't work out, so I have to have so many other things that I'm doing. There was a devotee attending, he thought he wanted to get into the area of finance. He had a scholarship at Ivy League College, Brown University. So he was studying finance, and he was describing what he was learning, and he decided to change his career. They taught the principle of hedging. Those of you that know something about finance, I got an education from hedging. Means you don't invest in one thing. You invest in multiple things, because this thing may go down, but if this thing goes down, that thing goes up. If this thing goes down, then that thing will go up. So you don't just invest in one thing, you do hedging, called hedging your bets, or hedging your investments. Don't put all your trust in one thing. You hedge. So that's bahushaka, many-branched. A little of this, a little of that, a little of the other thing, maybe some few other things, and mix them all together, and that's going to bring happiness. Oh, it didn't bring happiness. Maybe I need to rearrange my things. And life is made of an endless array of adjustments of things, hoping for happiness. Bahushaka. They never become resolute. And faith in Krishna, because who knows? Krishna may not pay attention in the moment when I need him. And so I got to hedge. I have to have some other backup plans, just in case Krishna neglects me. So to have this very singular intelligence, one has to have faith in Krishna. And faith in attaining Krishna bhakti. Then all other desirable things will be attained. That's so far in the purport. Then Prabhupada writes, when one is engaged in the duties of Krishna consciousness, he need not act in relationship to the material world with obligations to family, traditions, humanity, or nationality. That's the hedging program. It doesn't mean that one is neglectful of family or neglectful of tradition or I don't care. It means that need not be your primary objective. Your primary objective is pleasing Krishna. Because if you please Krishna, you're fulfilling all those other subsidiary obligations, like our discussion earlier today. I'm conscientious about what my duties in life are, but I know that the principal duty, the priority number one, numero uno duty, is attaining Krishna Bhakti. And by doing that, my obligations are fulfilled. There are many verses in the Bhagavatam that teach that. Sat karma nipano vipra mantra tantra visharada. If one may be expert in performing duties of a brahmana, all the duties. But if that person is not a Vaishnava, not pleasing Krishna, it amounts to nothing. Conversely, one may be low-born, but if their devotion is fixed upon Krishna, they've achieved perfection. Simple person. Not so sophisticated and expert in so many things, but if their devotion is fixed upon Krishna, their life is fulfilled. That one thing achieves all other things. So many other verses like that. So, next, fruitive activities are the engagements of one's reactions from past good or bad deeds. What's fruitive activities? It's what we do today in order to get something tomorrow. I'm doing this because I want that. I want money, so I'm going to do something to get money. Or I want to get my gold medal, so I'm going to work very hard to get that gold medal, etc. It's something that we do today to achieve something fruitive tomorrow. But what I consider to be something I want, that fruit that I want, that's going to be predicated by or determined by or driven by my past activity, something that I was my value system. I value fill in the blank. And whatever that blank is, it's depending upon my past fruitive activities. That's going to determine my ideals of what, or my values of what is a good goal to pursue today. And then I'm driven by that. So the message is, when one has this buddhi, or the goal of attaining Krishna bhakti, those fruitive activities don't carry the same value anymore. Because what I want to do is please Krishna. And whatever it is that will please Krishna, most likely, because Krishna is in pure goodness, most likely those activities are going to be in goodness, minimally. Like being a vegetarian. That's mode of goodness, eating foods in the quality of goodness. But one may be a vegetarian, but not a devotee of the Lord. Giraffes are vegetarians. Rhinoceros is vegetarian. Some people are vegetarian, but they're not necessarily devotees of the Lord. But one who is a devotee of the Lord, automatically a subset is, they're taking those foods that are in the quality of goodness and offering them to Krishna. So the obligation of this one, the lower one, is already automatically attained by the higher one. So if my if how I determine what I do and don't do in life is based upon I want that gold medal, or I want the presidential election, or I want to climb up the career ladder, or I want to get A's in my exams, or I want to be the gold medalist in the Olympics, or I want money, or whatever it is, that's driven by fruitive desire. And fruitive desire is based upon the pure and impure, the pious and impious activities of the past. Devotional service is not driven by either the pious or the impious activities. It's not started by or impeded by pious or impious activities. It's on another platform. It's something that we're going to hear later in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna gives buddhi. Next. This is an interesting sentence. When one is awake in Krishna consciousness, he need no longer endeavor for good results in his activities. So, when you go to school, don't worry about getting good grades. Hey, that's a good program. Wait a minute, she's got to study for her grades. When she studies for her grades, it's to please Krishna. It's not so I get 5 gold stars after my name on my report card, but it's I want to please Krishna. So if I'm going to study, I'm going to study for Krishna. And that one who studies for Krishna studies better than the one who wants the 5 gold stars after their name, because it's for Krishna. Right? And in the workplace, there's a project we're all working on to get a certain task accomplished, and I'm part of the team to get that task accomplished. Fruitive is, I want a good result because I want to keep my job, and even better, they're giving a bonus for those who really work hard at the completing the project. And I want that money, and I want my job, so I work hard to get a good result. But a devotee doesn't have that motivation. They have the motivation, I'm here to please Krishna. I'm here to serve Krishna and be an example of Krishna consciousness in the workplace, because people need good examples, so that's my service, to be a good example. So I'm going to do this for Krishna. They don't need the motivation of, I want to get a good result. They have the motivation of, I want to please Krishna. Or mother and father, they want to have nice children in Krishna consciousness. The good result is that Krishna is pleased. When Krishna is pleased, the subset is already there. Nice children, nice behavior, nice speech, well-mannered. Because that's pleasing to Krishna. You follow? All other good things, all other desirable things, are achieved by achieving one thing. That, by definition, we just heard, that's faith. One who has that faith, Krishna gives buddhi, spiritual intelligence, how to reach him. Next, one who is situated in Krishna consciousness, when one is situated in Krishna consciousness, all activities are on the absolute plane, for they are no longer subject to dualities, like good or bad. Like Arjuna. He was calculating fighting against grandfather Bhishma and my teacher Drona and my cousin brothers. That's bad. So I shouldn't fight. But Krishna's indication is you should fight. I've arranged all of this array of armies so that they will be destroyed because of their impious activities that were so heinous. I've come to this world to eliminate demoniac kings. It's my plan. See this universal form. They've already been destroyed. They're entering into my mouths. It's already decided, Arjuna. So you can be an instrument or not an instrument, but it's been decided. So be an instrument. Nimittam matram bhava sabyasachin. Become my nimitta, my instrument, Arjuna. So killing is bad. But acting on religious principle for a kshatriya, that's duty. It's bad if one neglects duty for a kshatriya. Supposing there's somebody running around, you know, a serial killer, and a police officer said, no, I can't do anything, killing is bad. It's his duty to protect innocent people. If he says, oh, I can't do anything, it's bad, then more innocent people will be hurt because of his neglect of duty. He doesn't protect. Who's going to protect? It's his duty to protect. Even up to physical force. Even up to if there's, you know, a shootout. They have to carry that duty out. They're to protect. So, although killing is bad. If it wasn't on religious principle or legal obligation, police officers under arrest like everybody else for killing, because killing is bad. But when it's done on the right principle with right authority, then it's to be done, it's not to be neglected, and so on. People give arguments about vegetarianism. Maybe some of you have heard them. They say, what's wrong with killing animals? You're a vegetarian, right? So, do you not kill vegetables? What's the difference between you're killing a vegetable and we're killing an animal? Killing is killing, right? So, what's the difference? Why are you against our killing animals? And one reply is, you're right. Killing is killing, and killing should not be done. But there is a type of taking the vegetable. First of all, you're not killing wheat. The wheat is already dried. Life is gone, it turns golden, that's when you harvest the wheat. Or you take the apple from the apple tree, you're not killing the tree. You take the tomato from the tomato plant, you're not killing the tomato. You take the milk from the cow, you're not killing the cow, etc. So, and those foods, when they're offered to Krishna, the tree that produces the apple is being engaged in service to Krishna. That spirit soul that developed the body of a tree, and then the tree produced the apple, and you offer the apple to Krishna, that spirit soul is getting spiritual benefit because you offered the apple to Krishna. And the cow is getting spiritual benefit because you offered her milk to Krishna. And the tomato plant because you offered the tomato to Krishna. But supposing you take a potato, then you're taking the life. But that spirit soul that develops the potato body or the carrot body or the tuber plant, that spirit soul gets so much spiritual benefit by offering that potato or carrot, etc., to Krishna. So there's a spiritual principle, a conscientious spiritual principle involved that's different than taking the life of the animal, which is unnecessary, and the pain of the animal far exceeds the pain of the apple tree, or the cow, or the tomato plant. And it's God's intended purpose. It's food in the quality of goodness. Krishna accepts, but he doesn't accept offerings of meat. Where is there in Bhagavad Gita or any Vedic scripture that speaks of offering of meat to Krishna? There's no such thing. So we offer foods in the quality of goodness to Krishna, and Krishna accepts, and those living entities that participate in the offering, they get great spiritual benefit. So there's a transcendental world of difference between offering one's food to Krishna and taking the life of an animal. Spiritually, there's a world of difference. That's just an example. That when one is situated in Krishna consciousness, all activities are on the absolute plane, for they are no longer subject to dualities like good and bad. Then comes another very amazing sentence. The highest perfection of Krishna consciousness is, now you might think, go back to Godhead, or achieve liberation, or attain Vaikuntha, or awaken love of God. But that's not what Prabhupada writes. He writes, the highest perfection of Krishna consciousness is renunciation of the material conception of life. Why? Why is he saying like that? Because you can't get any further attainment without that attainment. And as long as you hold on to a bodily conception of life, you're going to see duality instead of transcendental life. You're going to see good and bad, right and wrong, desirable, undesirable, fruit of activity, something I want and something I don't want, and discriminate on that platform. And the transcendental message of Bhagavad Gita will go right over your head. What was it about? I don't know. I was in the bodily conception of life, and Krishna began with, you're not this body. So I guess I missed ABC. And if I get ABC, then I can spell words, and I can write sentences, and I can write paragraphs, and I can write a composition. I can accomplish so many things if I learn ABC, but without ABC I can't go any further. So the bodily conception of life has to be set aside, just as Krishna does in the earlier part of Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, before he goes into Buddhi Yoga, so that you can fix your intelligence upon the goal of attaining Krishna's pleasure. Then you can be fixed in that way, beyond the bodily conception of life. And that state is automatically achieved by progressive Krishna consciousness. By Krishna consciousness, it means Buddhi Yoga or Bhakti Yoga, by fixing the goal of all activity upon Krishna should be pleased. By all my activity, what I say, what I do, my work, my family life, my personal life, my discretionary time, everything. How I make my money, how I spend my money, how I live my day-to-day life. Krishna should be pleased. Next. The resolute purpose of a person in Krishna consciousness is based on knowledge. What's that knowledge? Vasudev Sarvamiti Samahatma Sudurlava. A person in Krishna consciousness is the rare good soul who knows perfectly that Vasudev or Krishna is the root of all manifestations. This references another verse of Bhagavad Gita. Do you know that, who knows the verse? Bahunam Jananam Mante Gyanavan Mam Prapadite Vasudev Sarvamiti Samahatma Sardurlabha. After many, many Janmas, Bhunam Janmanam Ante, after many births and deaths, maybe you'll find someone who has achieved perfection. And what that one who has achieved a jnani, jnana van, mam, prapajate, the jnani may surrender unto Krishna. And what is that knowledge that he has? Krishna is everything. He's the source of everything, and therefore everything is connected to him. Krishna is everything. Let me surrender to him. Very rare. But the root of transcendental, the root of this devotion to fixed faith in Krishna is knowledge. Krishna is the source of everything. As by watering the root of a tree, one automatically distributes water to the leaves and branches, so by acting in Krishna consciousness, one can render the highest service to everyone, namely self, family, society, country, humanity, etc. If Krishna is satisfied by one's actions, then everyone will be satisfied. We're, every day in our practices, we water Tulsi. We have Tulsi Puja, and in the course of Tulsi Puja, we water Tulsi. Now, where do we put the water? On each of the leaves, right? Why not? We're watering Tulsi. Tulsi is made of so many leaves. We put on the root. Why do we put on the root? Because by putting water on the root, it goes to all the leaves. And conversely, if we try to put water in all the leaves, nothing happens. It doesn't go in the leaves. It falls off the leaves, goes onto the soil and into the root and into the leaves. Because that's the system. So if we can find the root of all existence, we just place our energy there. The root of all existence is Krishna. Well, how do we know that? On the authority of Scripture we know that, because otherwise we don't know what's the root of all existence. Philosophers have been pulling their chin and scratching their head for generations to figure that one out, but it's disclosed within the Vedas. Krishna is the source of everything. So we place our attention upon the source of everything, Krishna. And by so doing, all of our duties to family, society, nation, etc., etc., it's accomplished. It doesn't mean that mothers don't have to cook their meals and feed their children. That's not what it means. But when we do that, it's in service to Krishna, etc. We do our various duties mindful of that Krishna is the root of all existence. Next, service in Krishna consciousness is, however, best practiced under the able guidance of a spiritual master who is a bona fide representative of Krishna, who knows the nature of the student and who can guide him to act in Krishna consciousness. You'll find that statement probably 100 times in Bhagavad Gita, stated in different ways. The necessity, absolute necessity of having guidance, how to practically apply oneself in devotional service according to one's nature and understand the rules and standards and how to apply them. Guidance is necessary over and over. Read regularly and you'll understand how often that point is made. It's traditional within Vedic culture. One must have guidance of a spiritual master. As such, to be well versed in Krishna consciousness, one has to act firmly and obey the representative of Krishna, and one should accept the instruction of the bona fide spiritual master as one's mission of life. I'll tell you a little secret. It won't be a secret after I tell it. Srila Prabhupada, when he was in India, before he came to America, he was preparing a commentary on Bhagavad Gita so that he could take Krishna's teachings to the English-speaking parts of the world, as his spiritual master had asked him to do. And Prabhupada was feeling, in a humble way, I don't have the qualification. How can I do this? The task is so inconceivably challenging, and I'm this little person. I'm a little lone man living in Vrindavan. How am I going to accomplish this order of my spiritual master? He was thinking in a humble way like that. And as he was preparing his Bhagavad Gita commentary, he read Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's purport or commentary to the verse, in which he said in his purport exactly what Prabhupada wrote here, which is the secret to success in spiritual life is that one accepts the instruction of the spiritual master as one's life and soul. I'll say it again. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur wrote in his commentary to this Vyavasayatmika Bhuti verse, the secret to success in spiritual life is, now it's no longer a secret, that one places implicit faith in the instructions of the spiritual master as one's life and soul. So Prabhupada said, he closed the commentary, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and it went deep in his heart, and he understood, I must go. It's my life and soul. My spiritual master has ordered me. And Prabhupada said that instruction of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur carried me all the way to America. That my spiritual master has given me an instruction. I should have complete faith in carrying out the instruction, even as mission impossible. He wants it done, I must do it. Successful or unsuccessful, my success is that I carry out the instruction of my spiritual master. I place it upon my head, I put it in my heart, it's my life and soul. And so he came. And we're all indebted to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur for presenting such a powerful message. And Prabhupada doesn't put it in a paraphrased form here in the purport. To be well-versed in Krishna consciousness, one has to act firmly and obey the representative of Krishna, and one should accept the instruction of the bona fide spiritual master as one's mission in life. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur instructs us in his famous prayers to the spiritual master as follows. We sing this every morning when we have Mangal Arati. Yasya prasadad bhagavat prasado, yasya prasada nagati kutopi, dhyam suvang sasya yasyastri sandhyam, vande guru sri charanarvindam. Quote, translation. By satisfaction of the spiritual master, the Supreme Personality of Godhead becomes satisfied, and by not satisfying the spiritual master, there's no chance of being promoted to the plane of Krishna consciousness. I should, therefore, meditate and pray for his mercy three times a day and offer my respectful obeisances unto him, my spiritual master. Last paragraph. Prabhupada goes back to the bodily conception of life again, saying, the whole process, however, depends on perfect knowledge of the soul beyond the conception of the body. Hey, that's ABC, right? You know, the soul is not the body. Or the self is not the body, the self is the soul. That's who we are. But then he writes, not theoretically, but practically, where there is no longer a chance for sense gratification manifested in fruitive activities, one who is not firmly fixed in mind is diverted by various types of fruitive activities. So various types of fruitive activities can be religious or irreligious, good or bad. What Krishna is speaking about here in this verse and in this section of second chapter is transcendental life that's beyond good and bad, beyond dharma and adharma, or as he says in the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Shubha Ashubha Palayar Eva Mokshase Karma Bandhanai. Beyond the conception of auspicious and inauspicious activity is the platform of devotional service, of trying to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, in that way of life, the good result is your sincere endeavor. And whatever fruit comes from that sincere endeavor, that's Krishna's mercy. And we accept like that. And good fruit, bad fruit. Whatever Krishna wants, let me just focus on trying to please Him very sincerely. And by that focus, that's the path of gaining bodhi, gaining spiritual intelligence, how to reach Him. And other than that, one's certain to be involved, the conclusion is, in various types of fruitive activity, where I want to enjoy is the program. Notice, I just replaced Krishna, and because in devotional service, Krishna should enjoy. At least let me try for that, let me sincerely strive for that, and the result is up to Krishna. So, very nice verse, very important verse. Let's chant it one more time together, and then we can see if you have some questions. Text 41. Vyavasayatmika bodhir
Vyavasayatmika bodhir
Ekeha kuru nandana
Ekeha kuru nandana
Bahushakayanantascha
Bahushakayanantascha
Buddhayo vyavasayinam
Buddhayo vyavasayinam.
Those who are on this path are resolute in purpose, and their aim is one. O beloved child of the Kurus, the intelligence of those or irresolute is many branched. Let's see if there's any questions or discussion on the verse. Nice verse. Very important. Shamran, yeah? No? Yeah. Sadrupa? No? Okay, go ahead.
Maharaj, it's said that the satisfying Krishna, that there is no longer obligation to any like family and other things and everything. And like, how do we understand like there? But there is like right now, there is pressure from family side.
No, it doesn't mean let them go. Don't pay any attention. Be as irresponsible as you like. It's okay. That's not what it says. It means the obligation is not the satisfaction of these persons. The obligation, our master is Krishna. And Krishna should be pleased. Now, taking that as our priority, now I have these various other persons that are involved in my life. I have my employer at work. I have my family members in home. I have my parents that live somewhere. I have, you know, the police officer who's patrolling the street. You know, I have people that I'm, you know, I'm accountable to. But in all of those activities, my sense should be, let me please Krishna. Let me please Krishna. And that determines how I act in relation to all those persons and all those fields of activity and duty.
There could be a chance, like, if I try to please Krishna, that my family members won't get satisfied with the result of something. So
what if you're, you should carry out your activity in such a way that Krishna is pleased, and Krishna will consider, you know, when you're properly guided, Krishna will be considering how in your heart you're regarding your parents and their needs and their expectations and so on. But your Krishna consciousness is your goal. Pleasing Krishna is your goal. There's details in all of that, but I'm just stating principle.
I have one more question.
Okay.
So my, from yesterday class, like you said something about the reciprocation from, like reciprocation comes. So I have a question on that.
Reciprocation comes from?
Krishna.
From Krishna, okay.
I want to understand that, what is that? And like and I think what I'm thinking is like faith for like beginner, faith will grow suddenly when there is something reciprocation from that side. So I just want to understand that, like from you, that like what's the concept of reciprocation and what does it mean? And all.
Well, it's love. And love is maybe something very tangible. Love may be something intangible, but it's love. So it's not that love means I serve Krishna and Krishna gives me wealth. That's a sign that Krishna loves me. And if I serve Krishna and Krishna doesn't give me wealth, something wrong in Krishna's side. He doesn't love me. The reciprocation is an exchange of love from Krishna. And it may be wealth, and it may be everything stays the same, or it may be look like, you know, I'm headed for trouble. But Krishna's support is there, and that's part of Krishna's love. I mean, you know, it's difficult for us in the immature stage, because you're describing in the beginning stage, to understand how reciprocation with Krishna, how it will come. Just like a child maybe may hear from their parents, you have to go to school. And they're saying, I want to play. And you're saying, no. You can play after school, but you have to go to school. Why are you not reciprocating with me? I want to play. I play nicely. Let me stay home and play. You can play after school. You have to go to school. Because one day you're going to grow up and you're going to need, you know, that education. It'll be of great value for you. You may not be able to understand it now. Trust me. It's something you need to do. Because they may not understand the well-wishing of the parent and the intent of the parent for the small child. They need certain skills to lead their life. So, similarly, in an immature stage of devotion, or the beginning stages of devotion, we may not be able to so well discern Krishna's reciprocation. We may, you know, a certain feeling. We're trying, for example, we may try to chant our japa very nicely, and there's some reciprocation. We feel something. There's an example. But, you know, it give some other examples where there's some obvious reciprocation. So, but that may not be so obvious, the reciprocation that Krishna is giving. But in principle, out of trust, some basic faith, there is Krishna is a person. There's reciprocation from Krishna on Krishna's side, just as, let's say, if you have a relationship with another person, there's some reciprocation with that other person. That's what a relationship is. It's not a one-sided thing. So one of the things that Krishna is giving is he's giving knowledge. Krishna is giving the association of devotees. Krishna is giving a practice that lifts us out of the mire of material existence. Krishna is giving us prasadam. And even people that don't know what prasadam is, they like it. There's something special about it. They don't know what that something special is, but they like it. It's something very special. That's a form of Krishna's reciprocation. He's dissolving the reactions to our so many material activities. just by that's part of his reciprocation. And how do you measure that? As, you know, I'm getting reciprocation from Krishna. Well, slowly, slowly, you know, the in the language of nectar devotion, kleshagni, the sufferings of material existence diminish or are eliminated. And shubhada, the auspiciousness of life, begins to awaken. One feels lighter, feels a joy or a steadiness of devotion to Krishna that just wasn't there before, just from practicing in Krishna consciousness. A detachment from worldly things that are time wasters. You just lose interest in them. And so on. So there are some obvious forms of reciprocation from Krishna that we can examine. And there's some others that are, we may not have, like a small child, we may not have the capacity to understand. But with faith, we can, there's trust that that's there. Krishna's seeing our sincerity, and he's accepting our sincerity, and he's reciprocating with our sincerity. He's making that connection with us stronger again. And it's not just something that we're doing from our side, it's a relationship. Krishna is extending himself to us as we extend ourselves to him. It's only natural. Okay, anything else? Yes?
How to get beyond the bodily conception of life?
How to get beyond the bodily conception of life?
Theoretically, get it.
Apply it. That's how to go beyond theory. You apply it. Want some examples?
Yes.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Well, that wasn't bodily. You know, what bodily benefit did I get from that? So is there benefit in that? Well, let me try again. Hare Krishna. So I practice chanting, and like this question about reciprocation, what's the experience? And by sincerely chanting, I can be lifted above the bodily conception. And lifted above the bodily conception means my appreciation for the values of life start to move from those things that are temporary to those things that are eternal. And those things that are temporary don't hold the same merit for me. Devoid of a spiritual conception of life, what is it that I want? I mean, when I travel, it's not too uncommon when I visit Indian families' homes, their son is now away at college, they ask me to stay in the son's room, and there's the classic room of a high school kid. There's one wall that has a fancy red sports car, generally a convertible. Another wall that has a picture of a movie star, some, you know, Bollywood movie star, and another wall that has a picture of Michael Jordan or some, you know, sports, a cricket player or somebody, you know, a sports hero. And on their nightstand is a little picture of Ganesh, because they're a pious family. But what does he want Ganesh to help him get? He wants to help him get that nice sports car. You know, the enjoyment of a Bollywood movie. And, you know, an appreciation from his favorite sport and the sports hero. Om Jaya Jagadisha Hare. That's the bodily concept. And going beyond the bodily concept is hearing the message of Bhagavad Gita And along with it, the practice of awakening the dormant consciousness of the soul through calling upon God's holy name, those two practices together carry one beyond the bodily conception. And then in that case, it doesn't matter who's in the assembly. It doesn't have to be people that are all from India or even all from the same part of India, because then I can relate, because, you know, we have similar language and, you know, bodily things together. It doesn't matter. What matters is that there's genuine teachings and the application of those teachings. So that's my attraction, is for the essence of spiritual life. So the application of that is look for the essence and apply it in your life. Slowly, slowly, slowly. And one will be elevated. And I received a letter from a 16-year-old girl 2 days ago, and she was describing her experience of contemplating on what does it mean to be spirit soul? What does it mean? You're not this body. And then she asked, am I supposed to meditate on this? Or is it just supposed to happen through devotional service? And she said, I find that when I meditate on it, particularly when I'm chanting, I'm meditating on, yeah, this sound vibration is on the spiritual platform and the soul is beyond the body. What I find is, I find a happiness there. And in that happiness, so many other things that are just temporary, and this is a teenager now, and in a while they're gone. I just don't place the same value in those things anymore. And then she said, after some time that fades, and I'm a teenager, I become attracted to all these temporary things again. But when I meditate on what does it mean, just like you're asking the question, she's describing, combined with chanting and the wonderful spiritual teachings we have, I feel a joy inside. Because that's like who I really am, and all these other things are far less important. They're very transient. Here today, gone tomorrow, and I don't value them. I value this spiritual dimension of life. This practical application. You contemplate, you introspect, you try to live on that platform, you respect other living beings because they are spirit soul, although maybe it's theoretical, but you try to apply the theoretical, offering respect to other living beings because their identity is their spirit soul too, just encased in a different body. Apply it, and the realization grows. Prabhupada writes in Bhagavad Gita, one who acts in knowledge increases their realization. Anything else? Yes.
In most of the cases, like it's prescribed that to know Krishna, we have to approach upon the spiritual master, and the relationship should be only from the spiritual master to understand Krishna. But I have been struggling with this, that I'm not able to sincerely follow the instructions.
So what to do? How to go with the next step? Keep trying, because the principle is right. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, unto one who strives by right means, success is guaranteed. So that requires some faith, but you continue to strive. take the principle that you know is correct, you just described it, and you keep applying it. Krishna will see your sincerity and he'll reciprocate. He'll help you. And I'll read twice. The whole process, however, depends on perfect knowledge of the soul beyond the conception of the body. Not theoretically, but practically. When there is no longer a chance for sense gratification manifested in fruitive activities. One who is not firmly fixed in mind is diverted by various types of fruitive acts. So, okay, that tells me I need to, like, not just only try to apply the instruction of the spiritual master, but I need to take a look at how close am I to the beyond the bodily conception of life. Am I situated? Maybe that I'm in the bodily conception of life, and that's holding me back. So now, like your husband asked, now how do I work on the going beyond the bodily conception of life? We discussed that a little bit. And in all activities, and all, even material activities, certainly all spiritual activities as well, there's an element of practice. Practice consistently, like somebody wants to be good at mridanga playing. They can't just like take a lesson and boom, they're a good mridanga player. It takes practice, or harmonium, or driving a car, or whatever it is. It takes practice. And by practice, abhyasa yoga yoktena, by constantly striving according to proper means that Krishna gives, and under the guidance of the spiritual master, one continues to strive however long that takes. And that then gradually the empowerment or the capacity comes from Krishna. That's the faith of one who has trust in Krishna. And now, once again, beyond the bodily conception of life. Otherwise, there's all these filters that a good idea doesn't come through because we're filtering it out. Okay. Yes?
Maharaj, the question is more on within the body and the soul.
Okay.
The soul is much more fundamental than the body, obviously.
Okay.
How come between the religions and in this world, there's so much misunderstanding between, I mean, what a soul needs and the existence of the soul? Between the religions, how come there's so much difference?
Because of ignorance. Well, we'll say it more broadly, and because of the modes of nature. Just like medicine. Just like anything. There's modes of nature, so there's medicine that heals, and it's medicine and goodness, medicine and passion, and medicine and ignorance.
But compared to other things that are more agreed upon, but this looks to me such a fundamental.
It's fundamental, but you know, there's modes of nature. And according to modes of nature, there are different types of faith. It's right in Bhagavad Gita. Divisions of faith, there's a whole chapter. According to the influences of the modes of nature, there's divisions of faith. And according to faith, I'll say mode of goodness message, mode of passion message, mode of ignorance message. And I have strong faith. I have my conception. They have strong faith in my conception. Just ask me. So what's beyond those modes of nature? That's also discussed in Bhagavad Gita. And it can be accessed by one who is hearing this message without filters, without, you know, through a transparent disciplic succession. At least the opportunity is made available. But largely, it's not. Like one of the other classes I was attending here, somebody, maybe it was in Bayahari's home, I can't remember, somebody was asking the question, there were some basic teachings within Christianity. Where did it go wrong? Was it here? Okay. So, long answer, but a short summary is, there was a plan for disciplic succession, but this disciplic succession got interrupted. So the original teaching got lost, and now there's so many ideas. So many ideas. So why there's not just one idea? Because there was one teaching. Because disciplic succession is broken, the modes of nature are acting, covering and distorting and obscuring the original teaching. And that's just one religion. There's one to speak of many. I mean, I could spend about 15 minutes and have you all rolling on the floor in laughter about the different ideas that are out there in the spiritual marketplace about what the soul is. It's really funny. And in one sense, it's really sad. Here's one that I learned in college. Where I went to college, there were lots of young Jewish students attending the same college. So something I learned about their ideology is there's Jewish souls and there's non-Jewish souls. And Jewish souls are chosen. It says that in the Old Testament. Jewish, they're the chosen people. So you can convert and become a Jew, but you're still not a Jewish soul. You have to be, you know, a Jewish soul. Now how do you become a Jewish soul? They don't have an idea of reincarnation. It's just, you either are or you aren't. There's this pool of Jewish souls and there's everybody else. That's one idea. Then there's, you know, there's animal souls and there's plant souls and different types of souls. That's another idea. Human souls and angel souls. That's another idea. And there's big souls and little souls. Mahatmas and small, regular, ordinary souls. And then there's diminished ones, Duratmas. You have, you know, in sizes, small, medium, and large. Etc.
So all these ideas are different opinions came because of
the modes of nature.
It's not that some selfish people have created.
Well, that's there, but the groups of people can be influenced by the modes of nature as individual persons can be influenced by the modes of nature. You have a question? Yeah?
What's the definition of liberation?
That's your question? What's the definition of liberation? Okay. Well, there's different types of liberation. Depending upon the type of liberation, you might give a definition. One kind of like minimal will go up. Minimal liberation notion is no longer influenced by the modes of nature, no longer influenced by karma. So it's like definition by negation. Not this, not that. When the soul reaches that stage where there's no longer modes of nature acting and no longer the past activities acting to influence us, that's liberation. It's a neutral state. Then there's another going up, liberation definition is where instead you, it's called sayuja, or merging with Brahman. Heard of that before? Becoming one with the Supreme. That's a notion of liberation. That's one of five kinds of liberation. It's called technically sayuja, merging with Brahman or Brahman. There are four other kinds of liberation. We're going up now. Where one doesn't just enter into the effulgence of the spiritual world, but one goes to the spiritual planet where that effulgence is coming from. And that planet is Vaikuntha, spiritual planet where Narayan resides. And the four types of liberation are sarupya. Rupa means form. When you get the same, a form like the Lord. Samipya, sharsti. When you get a opulences like the Lord. You salokya, you attain the planet of the Lord. And you attain an intimate relationship with the Lord. Those are four types of Vaishnava liberations. And then there's another idea that's it's beyond those four ideas, where wherever Krishna wants me, it may be in Vaikuntha, it may be on earth, it may be in heaven, it may be in hell, maybe wherever he wants me to go, I simply want to engage in his service. Such a person is liberated. Even though they may have a material body in this realm, by consciousness, they're beyond, they're liberated. They're with Krishna because their consciousness is with Krishna. When your consciousness is with Krishna, you're with Krishna. That's liberated. Wherever you may be residing, it may be on Vaikuntha planet. It may be here. Such a person is a liberated soul if their consciousness is absorbed 100%, no other shelter but the shelter of desiring Krishna's service. So that's a liberated soul. May you become a liberated soul. Anything else? Yes.
Maharaj, I had a question. We hear the importance, especially with this quote, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, by satisfaction of the spiritual master, the spiritual personality of Godhead becomes satisfied.
Yeah.
By not satisfying, so on. I was wondering if you could just explain a little bit more. I mean, that's really the main the pinnacle of Christian consciousness.
Yeah.
How can we understand that a little better? How does that work?
Well, the core of it he presented already by saying one should accept the instruction of the bona fide spiritual master as one's mission in life. So, we'll take Prabhupada's example that I was referring to already. Here he is in Vrindavan, and one may think, my goodness, he's living in Vrindavan. He's successfully achieved a state where he can read and receive the teachings of our predecessor acharyas. He's in the renounced order of life. He's living at the Radhadamodar temple. I mean, that's so wonderful. But he's got this order that says, leave that and go to this place where nobody knows Krishna, and their culture is a culture of no culture, and give Krishna. And to do that simply for the pleasure, simply to carry out, simply to make it my life and soul, carry out Bhaktisiddhanta's order for that purpose, not for getting some recognition, oh, look what he did, but for the pleasure of his spiritual master as his mission in life, purpose in life. That's pleasing. Then Prabhupada explained, even if nobody came, he carried out the mission. It's the solace, the happiness, the joy was, I've carried out the message to my best ability. And Krishna reciprocated. Initially there was nothing But Krishna's reciprocation was his contentment of heart, and then Krishna sent some people after 1 year. I mean, imagine going on book distribution and not distributing one book for a whole year. Not likely would you continue book distribution for a whole year. For a whole year, not one book. But still continue, because it's the order of my spiritual master. That's very pleasing. Whether there's results or no results, then there's results. It's not that the results make one, then now you're very pleasing because you're getting nice, good results. Just the sincere endeavor, then that's very pleasing. Striving, it's a loving relationship. Let's take the case of a child that's going to school, and the parents see my child is diligently doing their homework, and you know, one child is getting A's and the other child is getting C's. You know, that's maybe not such a common scenario, but supposing that's the case. I'm saying that for benefit of our parents here. You know, they should be equally pleased with the child that's striving to their capacity and they're getting a C. They shouldn't say to the child, oh, you're only getting a C, but your brother or sister, they're getting A's. What's wrong with you? That's not good. If they see they're both trying, one has this capacity, the other has that capacity, but they're trying to their capacity. Very good. Very good. Thank you very much for trying to your capacity. Don't become discouraged. Continue to try to your capacity. That's pleasing to the parent to see that they're trying the best they can. And Krishna's like that. He wants to see that his representative, the spiritual master, who's inviting souls to come to Krishna, that someone takes that invitation to come to Krishna very seriously and applying themselves. Krishna is very pleased by that. It's a relationship with Krishna that we can understand through the medium of the spiritual master. Maybe the parent will help the child that's getting C's to do their homework so they'll understand their math better and they'll start getting B's and A's. Maybe there's just something that they didn't quite catch on to, and so they'll help them rather than like, why? Well, same with spiritual life. If one is not accomplishing the result so well, but is sincerely trying, then it's natural that one will extend some special help. Because that devotee and that servant is pleasing to Krishna. Okay, we've hit the 10 after 1 mark. And thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.
His Holiness Srila Prabhupada Maharaj ki jai.